Good evening. Good evening, Twin Cities. Welcome back. And points elsewhere, might add. How is your Saturday evening mood? Intriguing. Different kind of a show coming up this evening. For the next 3.5 hours, we're going to be talking about and listening to a great deal of shortwave radio via tape and so forth. Good guest this evening, Kim Elliott by name, fellow of about 26, who is associated with the University of Minnesota. His own personal hobby has been, for a number of years, the world of shortwave radio listening. And after putting in a certain number of hours and days of work, we came up with any number of, I think, what will be interesting tape samples of what you might hear on the shortwave bands. We're talking about, in the main, international shortwave broadcasts, albeit the frequencies between the broadcast band and up there into the higher frequencies contain ever so many other frequencies devoted to marine, maritime, you name it, civil services types of thing, they have it. But tonight we'll be dealing with the voices of Radio Moscow, Radio Peking, perhaps the BBC, Radio Albania, Sweden. I think eventually a bit of German propaganda that was taken off the airwaves and recorded back in the days of World War II. And along the way, of course, our telephone lines are going to be open for your questions, for your comments, of which we hopefully will get quite a few, at 333-2363. Kim Elliott is our guest, welcoming into our studio. Nice to have you with us, Kim.
Good to be here.
What sort of thing do you do over at the university?
I'm a graduate teaching associate of radio TV production in the Department of Speech Communication.
Mm. In other words, you take people at the university who want to learn how radio stations produce their product, put it together, and get it on the air.
Our version of that, yes.
Your version of that.
Right.
Uh-huh. Do they find jobs after they get out?
In production areas, it's tough, sure, to find jobs, but in academic concerns, teaching history, survey, economics of broadcasting, that's a good field right now.
All right. Getting down to shortwave radio, how long have you been personally interested in it?
Oh, I was ready to buy a shortwave when I first saw the ads in Boys Life magazine when I was 9 years old, but I didn't have the $40 for the receiver.
That's right.
So it was when I was about 13 years old, and that was about 1965, and I started listening then and immediately fell in love with it.
Just for starts, what seems to be so fascinating to a certain number of people, not everybody, but a certain number of people, what seems to be so fascinating about the world of shortwave?
I guess it's the international fantasy trip that it affords, just being able to sit there with a radio and twist the dial and hear 30 or so countries at one sitting. There's something fascinating about that. Counting up the number of countries you've heard, that's a certain feeling of achievement there.
Mm-hmm.
If you're politically inclined, then there's a lot of interest there then.
Yeah, are you getting these things as well? Incidentally, there are a couple of questions that almost invariably come up when you attend to this subject, and you've had these questions given to you many, many times. Which ones are they?
Everyone who's listened to shortwave gets the same questions. First, whom do you talk to?
Who do you talk to?
Yes, we don't talk to anyone. We're not amateur radio operators. Amateur radio is an related hobby, but it's a different hobby.
Different fraternity entirely.
Exactly. I happen to be a ham radio operator, WA9YVR, portable zero, but that's a different hobby, and shortwave radio is actually my main hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And to listen to shortwave radio, you don't need a license, you don't need any special technical expertise, it doesn't require fancy antennas, just a little portable radio and in your backyard, and you can listen to the world.
When you say a little portable radio in your backyard, you can listen to the world. Of course, that's the state of the science today. And there was a time, of course. Let's go back for starts. A lot of people who are listening may well remember going back into the living rooms of America back in the 1930s when Philco and GE and Atwater, Kent, and God knows who else were busy producing behemoths. I mean, they were monsters. They were almost invariably floor models, and they usually had two or three shortwave bands. Just how good they were, I don't know. Maybe memory dictates that they were absolutely superb receivers, or maybe they weren't. But a certain number of Americans then, perhaps, started to listen to whatever was available on shortwave. Do they still do that?
I don't think the radios are as available as they used to be, although there are a lot of multi-band shortwave portables that were sold by Penny, Sears, etc. Mm-hmm. in the 60s. They were pretty popular.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they were as good as those 30s models radio. So I don't really know what the deal was. You had to listen to the rhetoric of the back then. It would be Zeeson in Germany and Rome and those stations. If you're interested in that rhetoric, you would listen, but otherwise you'd probably tune out.
Okay, which brings us up actually to the present. What I'm getting at is the fact that there is apparently a basic difference between the average radio listener in the United States mm-hmm. and, say, the average listener to a radio, say, in France or West Germany or Scandinavia, in Europe. They have radios, a high percentage of them apparently, mm-hmm. cover more than just the broadcast band. And incidentally, they call it, what, the medium wave?
The AM band there is called medium wave, mm-hmm. and I'll be using the word medium wave a lot tonight, and then shortwave are the frequencies above medium wave.
Mm-hmm. And does the average European then tend to listen to frequencies beyond his broadcast band, the medium wave?
I'm not sure, actually. They have shortwave radios there, but I don't think the average person in Europe also listens to foreign broadcasts. Mm-hmm. They listen to FM a lot there,
mm-hmm.
and it's domestic, and back in the days when pop music was not allowed. People did listen beyond their, you know, international waters to pirates, and Sweden broadcast rock and roll music when Britain didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So there were reasons there for listening. Radio Luxembourg was a big rock and roll station broadcasting mm-hmm. to Britain. Those were the reasons.
But in Europe, simply because of the geographic containment, countries and people are much closer together.
Yeah.
Apparently, then, a lot of the stations in one country that are broadcasting, say, on what we call the broadcast band, you call medium wave, are still very readily accessible in other nearby countries.
Sure. You could sit on the beach with an AM radio or a medium wave over there and listen to Radio Tirana, Albania, beach in Britain.
You could.
Yeah.
You could.
In the evening.
And it seems to me you gave me an interesting book, which I quickly read through. It's Radio Power
Radio
or something
Power.
By Julian Hain.
Hale,
and it told about radio and propaganda, the mm-hmm. way it's been used internationally between countries, mainly European. And apparently they went into the Lord Haw-Haw bit. I don't know how many people listening have any idea who we're talking about. The fellow's name was what, William Joyce?
William Joyce.
And he was an upper-class Briton who had mm-hmm. fascist sympathies,
sure.
Nazi Germany, moved over there shortly after the war broke out, or just before the war broke out in 1939. And apparently he went on almost nightly in German radio, I believe, in studios in Frankfurt or Hamburg, and then moved elsewhere. And apparently he could be heard very clearly every single evening in Great Britain on
right.
a frequency right next to a local home service frequency of the BBC.
Right. Yeah, it's fairly easy in Europe, I guess, to hear other countries, especially back then when the frequencies were not crowded.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Should we get into the area of propaganda before somebody brings up, and they'll bring it up again and again, I suppose, what sort of a flavor do you personally discern when you listen to shortwave radio?
Okay. First of all, the broadcasts to North America are in English from about 40 different countries, so you get a pretty wide spectrum of propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
We use the word propaganda both in its positive and negative connotations. From the Radio Moscow and its allied countries, we get a fairly one-sided message, never anything bad about their own country, lots of things bad about the
mm-hmm.
West, and it's pretty fairly closely associated to the foreign policies of those countries.
Mm-hmm.
From Radio Peking, the rhetoric is a little more ideological, a lot more cliches being used, it's still fairly unbalanced, but
mm-hmm.
Peking's a little more interesting to hear, too, because of the colorful language and more music, and
mm-hmm.
Certain ways Peking is superior to Moscow. Then from Western Europe, Switzerland, Radio Nederland, BBC, Germany, we hear news. Generally, they talk about the whole world. It's very balanced, very well-done coverage, and it's redundant because every station is saying the same thing about the world.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, the question is basic. This is the basic question. Why do various countries tend to have shortwave transmitting facilities?
Well, that's a good
even
question.
Radio. Countries such as Uganda.
Uganda. Well, for third world countries like Uganda, it's a prestige item,
mm-hmm.
And some of the third world countries feel that they have something they have to say to the world. Egypt is a third world country which has their foreign policy stakes are rather high right now. And so that is what behooves Radio Cairo to broadcast
mm-hmm.
to the world. It's one of the biggest, sixth or seventh
mm-hmm.
largest
mm-hmm.
international
mm-hmm.
station in the world.
Mm-hmm.
For Holland, for Radio Nederland, I would say it's more of an international public service. Holland is not
mm-hmm.
in the Imperial Empire building business anymore. They're not a great power, but They are a very popular station, and it's benevolent propaganda.
Let's go into another area, say France and Great Britain, and there might be one or two other countries, but those two, notably Britain, maintain and have maintained since about the late 20s overseas broadcasts, shortwave broadcasts, for their British or their French nationals, say in the African continent.
Right.
In other words, a lot of people who are natives of Britain or France in various parts, odd parts of the world, maybe in the African continent, where they simply don't have any local radio.
Yeah.
And to keep in touch with things that are going on in the world and back home, they would then tune to the frequencies of the BBC or Radio Paris or something of that sort.
Exactly. Every station that broadcasts in English to North America also has broadcasts in their own language to North America, and that's for immigrants, diplomats, students, anybody from the home country who happens to be here. Radio Stancia Rodina from the Soviet Union is several hours of Russian and Soviet languages to the U.S. daily.
Okay, we're starting to get some telephone calls here. It's going to be a while before we start taking calls, but we have plenty of time tonight. And frankly, personally, this is a program that I've looked forward to for a long, long time.
Me too.
Many, many years, as a matter of fact, in a sense. I have no idea how sometimes when I sit there 2:15, 2:30 in the morning, tuning back and forth, I have no idea how many people in the Twin Cities or in the United States might be listening to that particular station that I pick up. Probably the number is rather small.
We don't know. The statistics are hard to come by.
Just not there. Okay, what do we have here on our cartridge tapes? What do we have for tape samples coming up?
Okay, we're going to start with Communist World. We have some Radio Moscow, and this is their grand opening. Every station starts with a kind of a fanfare, a little bit of music. Every station has what we call an interval signal. It's a short tune that they play over and over again a few minutes before the broadcast begins, so that if you have a cheap portable and you don't know exactly what frequency you're on, listen for that tune and you'll know that that station will be coming on.
Repeat that. Almost every station has some sort of a little musical signature.
Right, called the interval signal.
The interval signal. Now, in the case of Radio Moscow, what's playing it? I know the tune. Da, 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 da.
That's it. And that's the first few notes of a patriotic song from the Soviet Union.
I see. And the Voice of America, of course. Da, 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 da.
He do at least be Columbia, the gem of the ocean.
That's right. When did they change that?
Oh, gee, around 70, maybe a little before then. They thought Columbia, the gem of the ocean, was a little too martialistic.
I like Yankee Doodle anyway.
Yeah, that's
better.
Rightly.
And then they have different variations of it and so forth.
Right.
And there are sometimes when you sit down, you're all set to listen to the Voice of America, good strong signal coming in, and you want to get the news, and you hear da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then the voice of the announcer says, the following program will be brought to you in Hungarian. And you move to a different frequency. All right, Kim Elliott is here. My name is Bob Allard. Our telephone lines are starting to fill up. We'll be taking some calls after a while. And very shortly, we're going to start to let you hear what we've been talking about right after this. Okay, Kim, let's see what we have. You have the master list, and we have our tapes all set up in the form of cartridge tapes for our ease and accessibility. Tape one has two cuts, one, two, and three. What are we about to hear?
We're going to hear Radio Moscow opening in English. This is their English to North America.
English to North America from Radio Moscow.
Right.
All right, here we go. And how long does this last, by the way?
A minute 41.
1 minute and 41 seconds. Here we go. Whoops.
They don't syncopate like that.
No, they don't syncopate like that. No,
Radio
Moscow. Push the wrong button.
Is Moscow. Good evening, everybody. You are tuned to the North American service of Radio Moscow, operating in the 19, 25, and 31 meter bands. This broadcast begins daily at 23 hours Greenwich Mean Time on 12 frequencies, 15.42, 15.24, 15.10, 12.05, 12.03, 11.96, 11.85, 11.77, 11.75, 11.73, 11.72, and 9.53 megahertz. Transmission in Radio Moscow's North American service closes down at 04 hours Greenwich Mean Time.
Here's the program for the next half hour. First, the news, followed by a commentary on the Middle East tour by Secretary of State Cyrus Vance. Then our regular feature, The Soviet Way of Life. Finally, our legal expert, Dr. Inga Mikhailovskaya, deals with a Soviet criminal court procedure.
All right, brief sample of Radio Moscow. Any comment?
No, just that's very typical. You noticed all the different frequencies that they broadcast on.
About 12.
Yeah, they have a lot of transmitters scattered throughout the Soviet Union, in Ukraine, Russia proper. They have a transmitter in Bulgaria. And then for the Pacific coast of the U.S., they have transmitters in Siberia, the Pacific coast of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
So they're well endowed.
I see. Okay, we'll maybe be making more comments about Radio Moscow after a bit, and I suspect that we'll get some calls. Calls are coming in, no shortage of them, apparently. What's the next cut coming up?
More Radio Moscow, opening of a Moscow review program, and a little bit of a news summary.
All right, here we go. How long does it run?
Minute 35.
1 minute 35.
This is Radio Moscow, and here is a summary of the news. The leading Soviet daily Pravda has called for banning without delay all new types of weapons of mass annihilation. It's accused the United States of stalling an international agreement in this field. The paper said the Soviet Union called for working out such an agreement back in 1975 and presented drafts of documents on this issue. These documents would have provided for banning the neutron bomb of the infrasonic and genetic weapons and other possible types of weapons of this class. The Soviet Union feels that it would be much simpler to preclude the development of such weapons than try to ban them when they begin to appear. At the World Anti-Racism Conference in Geneva, a group of socialist countries has tabled a draft resolution denouncing racial discrimination in Southern Africa and the United States. The proposed draft voices concern over the oppressed position of the black citizens of the United States, as well as of the American Indians and other national minorities. It also draws attention to the harsh exploitation of foreign workers in Western countries. There's been a rally in Washington in defense of the political prisoners in the United States. The two recently released from jail members of the Wilmington Gym, Joe Wright and Roy Barron, described the humiliating conditions of the prisoners. The two were released under mounting public pressure. In a speech at a rally of leaders of the National Union Against Racial and Political Reprisals,
and so forth. As you said earlier, they tend to pick up negative items in the news about, say, the United States.
And they also pick up on themes that the U.S. uses against the Soviet Union. When they invaded Czechoslovakia, they referred to our invasion of Cambodia, our invasion of Vietnam. They pick up the words. Human rights now is the word that they're picking up.
Yeah, and they're always sweeping like a radar for those negative items that they can include in their international broadcasts.
Yeah, sure, but especially picking up themes that showing that we're hypocrites.
Uh-huh. Okay, we've got all sorts of calls here at the ready, but I don't want to take any now because we're getting rather close to 9 o'clock and NBC News. Do we have another shortcut that we can play between now and 9?
Radio Prague is 201. The first one in the next is 47 seconds of Radio Budapest.
Okay, so have we gone through three cuts?
No, not yet.
What was the third cut?
We got Radio Prague for 2 minutes.
Radio Prague for 2 minutes. Yeah. I'll tell you, let's put that one aside because that might be a little on the longish side. What, do we have something shorter?
Yeah, on the first one here is 47 seconds, so Radio Budapest.
Radio Budapest. Okay, here we are.
Radio Budapest, Hungary. Radio Budapest is on the air to North America at 02 hours from Tuesday to Sunday and at 03 hours each day of the week on 16, 19, 25, 30, 31, 49, and 15.
Sample of Radio Budapest and the reception again in shortwave is not always...
No, we're can't promise you a rose garden. The reception will not be your armchair AM/FM listening.
Not normally, with exception, maybe some exceptions, such as the Voice of America on good condition, and of course the BBC. All right, Kim Elliott is here. My name is Bob Eller. We're winding up the first half hour of what should be a delightfully interesting program dealing with the world of shortwave radio. Speaking in terms of communication, much closer at home. I guess we could say in stentorian tones, this is Radio Minneapolis. You shall listen. That is an order. Well, hardly. We just don't do it that way over here. Well, we've got all sorts of telephone lines that are full, so we must be doing something right in terms of domestic broadcasting, United States style. And we're just getting started with three more full hours to go on our Saturday evening edition of TC Talk Line, dealing with the world of shortwave radio. Stick around. Might be kind of interesting. Sure, tonight our lines are just about full at 333-2363. We haven't taken any calls as yet. We're talking about the fascinating world of international shortwave radio. Good guest this evening, Kim Elliott, who is an associate professor or teacher.
Teaching associate.
Teaching associate, and there's a degree of difference at the university in which you teach people the aspects of radio production and so forth. But personally, you have been a hobbyist of shortwave radio listening for since you were 9 years old.
13.
Went way back.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got all sorts of calls waiting, and I think before we go into other samples of international shortwave broadcasting, which we'll hear a good many, let's take some of those calls and conversationally put them on for size. Hello?
Are you talking to me, Bob?
Yes, sir, I am.
Well, good evening to you, Bob, and I haven't talked to you for over 2 months.
How come?
You know why?
Why?
Well, I'll tell you. You had some calls a number of months back that I listened to, and you got me started to be an SWL.
A shortwave listener.
How about that, right?
Uh-huh.
Shortwave listener.
What's
yeah.
That?
Well, you know, there's a certain kind of a language, talking about rigs and talking about all kinds of stuff that only shortwave listeners catch on to. You follow me?
Well, strictly speaking, not necessarily. Shortwave listeners are exactly that. They're listeners. They might not understand what you're talking about in terms of ham radio.
Okay, all right. I'm not into ham radio yet. I'm a shortwave listener, basically, and I've got good equipment, and I want to talk to you because I used to talk quite regularly, maybe once, a couple of times a month.
Remember that.
I was born in Brooklyn, and I was a guy that walked over the Brooklyn Bridge back and forth to the Museum of Natural History and the Metropolitan Museum of Arts. We've talked many times on the radio, but I used to be kind of a regular caller, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got started on listening to shortwave, I tell you, you're starting something you may regret, Bob, because people get interested in shortwave, and this guy, Kim Elliott here, might detract from your audience, but I still got to encourage it, and I'll tell you why I think that.
Sure.
Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I got started. Aside from the fact that you had talked to some fellas that called into you, and you talked about shortwave radio, and I knew you were WA something or another, and you lost your license, and I regret that very much.
Let it go by default.
Yeah, all right, by default, right. But I remember when I was a boy, about 5 or 6 years old, 1927, my father had turned on, he was listening at night one night, and I can remember exactly to the day I sit here. And I'm an older guy, I'm more your age, you know, and so I'm speaking, you know, from past experience. My father had built crystal sets and transmitters and everything else, but he had a fine receiver, and I remember that old horn that came out. It was about 2 foot wide, you know what I mean?
I do.
All the coils and everything else that you plug in, and I used to fool around with that. I remember that as long as I lived. But in 1927, when Lindbergh landed in Paris, my father woke us all up with a hip hooray, Lindbergh, and we were living in Brooklyn. Now, I'm a kid there living there. Lindbergh made it to Paris. He's from Minnesota. And I'll never forget that day as long as I live. And somehow or another, over the years, and I'm so excited.
What was it, May the 22nd of 1927?
I don't know if it was May the 22nd, but I was about 5 or 6 years old then.
Sure.
And I remember that day as long as I live, when he was just elated that Lindbergh had landed in Paris, solo flight. And I want to say that during the Depression, my father, I'll never forget this, he was in a store buying an old Stromberg Carlson set. And one of the things it had on it was a shortwave. And I'm sure there were you mentioned the Philcos and a lot of other sets. There were a lot of great sets, but they all had shortwave, and some of them were just great. I used to listen to pilots, and living in Brooklyn there, I could listen to them, to pilots and marine calls out at sea, and the airplanes taking off, and police calls. And I think, and I'm going to say this to Kim especially, I'd like to hit for him, and both you, Bob, I know you're an old ham, so, and I'm not even a novice.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to be a novice. I want to be a general caller, maybe one day get an extra license. But I'm so excited about this because you got me started, basically, and revived my memories. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And to hear this kind of stuff, I don't think that people understand what they're missing.
Can I ask a quick fundamental question or two
go
at
ahead,
this point?
Shoot, I've talked enough.
Kim, if you want to hop in, fine, your mic's open. What kind of a receiver did you get to listen to shortwave?
I don't want to talk about my rig, okay?
Well, I just thought I'd got to ask.
I got a good rig.
Okay.
I'm going to get a transmitter, and I'm going to be transceiver. I also have a synthesizer, frequency synthesizer. So, I don't want to talk about it, but I don't think that's the important point. The point that I want to make is a beautiful thing. People don't know what they're missing today. Mm-hmm. During the Depression, as a kid, I remember I was excited. I think other people should get excited. I think they're missing something they cannot get any other way. Now, Kim, I'd like you to respond and ask the questions.
I would like to make a point first. You said that I'm not a ham yet.
I'm not.
Okay, that's fine. I don't think that shortwave listening should be a stepping stone to amateur radio, the great, wonderful world of amateur radio. Shortwave listening is a fine hobby in and of itself. It's for a different type of mind, I think, a more political, social mind. And if you don't ever become a ham, I don't think you're going to be hurting too much.
Incidentally, if I can come in at this point, I've check the lines, and we have three other people beyond this call. We have four people, in other words, and one line open. And for some odd reason, I suspect that almost all of our calls tonight are going to be males. For some reason, this hobby seems to attract males.
Yeah.
97, why is that?
We don't know. My research shows it's about 97% of the big shortwave club in the United States is male.
Mm-hmm.
It's a technical hobby, but there's no reason why women can't get into technical
hobby.
Can
I interject a moment
here?
Sure. I have three daughters.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a doctor. I won't go into that. And I think that it's about time that more gals, I'm for the gals getting into it. And I regret very much, I don't know why it is, the males are in it, but I am for the gals learning. And if I can have any influence on young people, I'm going to stress and I'm going to try to get the gals going into this.
Yeah, I agree. The hobby fraternity itself is working very hard to get more women interested. We certainly are not trying to keep them out, that's for sure.
Okay, we better wrap things up because our lines are totally full, and I do want to play some more samples of what Kim has brought in here from Voices Overseas.
Good talking, Bob.
Good
luck. Call you again some other time if I'm not listening to SWL.
All right, thank you very much. Very
okay.
Much. Be right back. More phone calls at the ready. Now, maybe one line available, but no hurry. All right, Kim Elliott, we've got Radio Prague all set to go. What are we up to hear?
We're going to hear their interval signal. You're going to hear a voice in the background. That's a Soviet transmitter that happens to be on the same frequency broadcasting from Moscow out to the Siberian hinterland.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's interfering.
Now, this is a cut that runs a little over 2 minutes, and we may or may not elect to let the whole thing run.
Yeah.
How's the quality?
Quality is somewhat mediocre because of that Soviet interference.
Okay, this is Radio Prague.
Radio Prague is on the air for North American listeners twice each evening at 01 and 03 hours, Greenwich Mean Time, in the 49, 41, 31, and 25 meter bands.
Welcome to Radio Pearl North American Broadcast. I am Merida, your program guide for today. And first in this 57-minute transmission, we bring you the news bulletin.
Which deals with the present propaganda campaign launched in the West in connection with the 10th anniversary of the defeat of...
And so forth and so on, Radio Prague. And as you said, Kim, you could hear fairly clearly, annoyingly, that you say it's a Soviet station about the same frequency.
Yeah, not intentional interference, it's just propagation is not with them tonight.
Uh-huh.
They're talking about their internationalist assistance that happened 10 years ago in 68 and saved the Czechoslovakian people from the counter-revolutionaries.
Yeah. Some of the material that we're going to hear tonight is fairly contemporary, fairly recently taped, including one that we'll get to eventually, I hope, of the Radio Vatican just a couple of weeks ago announcing the death in bulletin form of the Pope.
Right.
Okay, let's take a phone call or two. Our lines stay full. Hello.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening.
Well, I'm a male, and I'm your second consecutive native from Brooklyn, New York.
Well, I'll be darned.
Kim, first off, were you listening to Radio Vatican today?
I have an agent out in Wayzata who taped it this evening. I didn't hear it because I was on my way to the studio.
Uh-huh. First, I'd like to ask a few questions about equipment. What sort of equipment do you use? What sort of breakthroughs have occurred recently that are worth noting?
Mm-hmm.
And what would be your dream set if you had the money to invest in that, assuming you don't have the money?
Boy, that's quite a topic. We could spend several minutes on that. The breakthrough has been transistorization, integrated circuits, making the new shortwave receivers cheap and small. Japan is coming out with, well, the FRG7, the ASU is one example of it, and then Sony and Panasonic have some smaller units out that are not quite as rugged as the ASU, but they can give you precise readout. You know exactly what frequency you're on, and you can spend as little as 150 and get a very decent shortwave radio. My dream receiver wouldn't cost more than I've been listening to the ASU, and that's my dream receiver. If you want to have a good receiver, you're just going to have to pay less.
Mm.
The $1,000 rigs that they make in the United States are not as good as the $300 or $400 sets you can
make. That's too bad. That's really too bad.
Can you spell that brand name for me? Was it ASU?
Okay.
Yaesu.
Y-A-E-S-U. FRG7 is a good radio. And then Sony has a ICF5900W that I recommend. It's $150. 7 pounds. You can fit it in your briefcase. Panasonic RF2200 is about a $170 radio. I think it's a little bit inferior to the Sony, but the audio quality is magnificent. The FM band on it sounds like a stereo. The Sony and the Panasonics are portable, and they have FM bands as well as medium wave AM plus shortwave, and the ASU doesn't have FM.
Okay, now, second question. From my experience, it's at best difficult, if not impossible, to do international shortwave listening during the day. Is that because of my equipment, or is it because of atmospheric conditions that just can't be helped at all?
Good question. Happy to give the answer to that one.
Okay, it's a combination of several things. First of all, the propagation. Propagation is always best, by propagation I mean atmospheric conditions for radio, best at dawn and at dusk, and worst midday and in the middle of the night, because you need a path of either darkness or light, and in the middle of the day you only have one fourth of a globe away of lightness. There are not many stations beaming to North America also midday. So, yeah, midday, noontime listening is mediocre. Radio France International Africa is the exception.
Can you, or have you been able to pick up the BBC World Service during the day? I think they're particularly powerful.
They broadcast from 11 o'clock to 12:15 from Greenville, North Carolina, using a VOA as a relay site for North America.
The BBC.
The BBC does, yes.
You said in North Carolina.
Yeah, the Voice of America and the BBC have arrangements, and they use our transmitters for relay, and we use their transmitters for relay.
Better explain that while we're on that point, because it's kind of interesting, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are simply unaware of it. And it might be kind of even disconcerting, say, if you happen to have a rotary type of antenna that some hams yeah. use, and you think that you're getting the BBC, and yet the signal strength yeah. is coming in from a different direction.
Although antennas for shortwave are not very directional. Northern and Western Europe has problems transmitting to North America because they have to go over the auroral polar areas. And so they use relays in the Caribbean or somewhere in the Western Hemisphere. The signal is transmitted from Europe to Bonaire in the Netherlands, Antilles in the Caribbean, or Sackville in Canada. And then it's rebroadcast from there to the Western Hemisphere, to the U.S. or whatever. The Voice of America, in turn, has relays over in Morocco and Greece and Sri Lanka, Philippines, Thailand, a few other. They're going to put one in Botswana, probably. So that's what relaying is all about.
In other words, in the case of the VOA and a certain number of other countries, they don't depend on just their domestically placed transmitters to get the signal across.
No, certain parts of the world are just very hard to get to from North Carolina.
So consequently, they use a relay system.
Right.
Anything else, sir?
Oh, I'm sorry. Next question. You mentioned antennas briefly. Is there a simple way to put up a relatively good antenna for a shortwave set?
Yeah, what you do is you go to Radio Shack or someplace and you buy some, any place that sells wire. The place that sells you through PALS.
PAL Electronic, yeah.
They probably have wire. Any, just single strand and wire. And then you go absolutely crazy in your house. You just start stringing around trees, over the refrigerator, around your little brother. And you just do anything you want to. You can attach it to your bed spring, to your mirror, and try any kind of combination. I use 12 feet of wire on my awning, and that's my antenna.
Well, could you briefly explain for me how to reckon with Greenwich Mean Time? I recall on the Moscow tape they said they sign yeah. off, I think it was at 0400. Now, what would 0400 GMT be here in Minneapolis?
Or about, what, 8 hours?
Yeah, for Central Daylight Time, you subtract 5 hours from GMT. So right now it is 0220-something.
222.
0222 GMT. You subtract 5 hours for Central Daylight Time and subtract 6 for Standard Time, I hope.
Yeah.
And that's how you get GMT. It's not hard. You have to internalize GMT and think in terms of GMT. That's the best way to figure out this.
I suppose the best way to do it would be, say, pick up the BBC and they announce the time in GMT, and then you simply figure out how many hours difference
right.
that you are between your time and London time.
You think of a few key times, like 0500 is midnight our time, 2000 is 3 p.m., 7 p.m. is 0100 GMT. So think of a few key times, and then you extrapolate from there.
Right. Next, is there any one significant find that you've made in your listening, maybe a clandestine radio station somewhere that no one, to your knowledge, has ever picked up, something like that?
Oh, there's a breed of shortwave listener called a DXer. DX is a telegraph term for distance, and hams use DX for long distance, and shortwave listeners have picked it up for the gung-ho people who listen to really rare catches like Tristan da Cunha and the Falkland Islands. My rare collection was a station called Radio Americas Libre or something. It was an anti-Cuban, anti-communist pirate station or clandestine from the Caribbean or Florida or someplace. And I heard them one evening. Otherwise, no, I'm not a gung-ho. I don't look for the rare stuff. I listen to the, yeah.
Are there any local international shortwave clubs that you can recommend?
Yes, the Minnesota DX Club is a local group meeting monthly, and I'll give that address and a few others later, as soon as I can find my stuff.
Incidentally, because PAL Electronics is sponsoring part of the Tonight Show, and they're excellent people for what we're talking and dealing with, they could put you in touch with any number of the local clubs that do exist here in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, they know the ham clubs, maybe not this shortwave
club. No, they also know the shortwave clubs.
Oh.
I've seen the list and so forth. They deal with them quite a bit.
Well, good.
Shortwave listeners.
What sort of equipment do you think? I know the BBC has a major international monitoring service, not broadcasting now, but monitoring shortwave services from all over.
Yeah.
What kind of equipment would they have? I imagine it would be quite massive and very special.
They have a nice antenna farm. That's very important. And then they have a few dream receivers. I think Racal, R-A-C-A-L is the brand, and they're, you know, $2,000, $3,000 receivers. And but, you know, they're not that much better than the Yaesus or the radios like that. They're just easier to tune.
I think a good question at this point would be, why do various countries, and a lot of countries do this, maintain monitoring teams for 24 hours a day? And maybe in the case of the BBC, I think, what, 300 or 400 people in this terms of their personnel.
Caversham Park, they have quite a... BBC does it sort of as a public... It's a service for the BBC, so they know what other people are saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's for their intelligence. It's just sort of a political intelligence gathering, but it's above board.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Foreign Broadcast Information Service, which is kind of spooky, and they're a subdivision of the CIA, and they're a little harder to deal with for that reason. There's no reason why it has to be that way.
Okay, I'm going to have to move along here. Do you have another question?
Well, I'll just say that on the same theme, that monitoring, you know, enables us to keep our ears open for places like Cambodia and Vietnam. I imagine Bangkok's a fairly important locale for that right now.
For receiving monitoring?
For monitoring certain areas which are essentially closed off to the world except for a shortwave.
Yeah, I suppose they're doing it there. I don't know what FBIS is up to.
All right, sir. Thank you very, very much, and stay with us. The program should be kind of interesting. We're rolling right along, all sorts of calls, and I suspect, again, 3.5 hours will not be an overly long length of time. Let's turn that speaker down so we don't get the feedback. While we're getting that feedback, I'm going to pull your earphones out here.
Okay,
let's do a quick commercial, and coming up, we'll have something else briefly in terms of shortwave sampling right after this. To receive your Miller & Schroeder benefits, simply call Miller & Schroeder at 831-1500. That's 831-1500. Kim Elliott, what do we have coming up?
Okay, we have a kind of a dramatic thing coming from Radio Berlin International. That's East Germany, and this was monitored in the Mediterranean by one of my own personal friends. And there, it was a thing about SWAPO, Southwest Africa. We'll listen
now. What is SWAPO?
The Southwest Africa Liberation Organization, and that East Germany, of course, is allied with the Namibian independence movement from South Africa.
Okay, this runs, I think, slightly under a minute. Here we go. This is East Germany.
Right.
Stop the murderers. Save the lives of SWAPO fighters Aaron Mushimba and Henrik Shikongo. Apartheid cannot be tolerated by human conscience. As the United Nations declare, it is a crime against humanity. The International Court of Justice ruled on the 21st of June, 1971, all United Nations member states are bound to consider South Africa's presence in Namibia and all South African acts in regard to Namibia as illegal. The illegal death sentences passed on Aaron Mushimba and Henrik Shikongo are planned cold-blooded murder. SWAPO is the only legitimate representative of Namibia.
So that was East German. That's how dramatic it gets sometimes. I took that example from a European monitor just to show what extremes international broadcasting can go to.
I think that we'll also notice as the time goes by tonight that the English used by various countries, usually rather good English, and we're going to get into that too, the interesting aspect as to where they get their English-speaking announcers for international shortwave broadcasting. Theme coming up behind us, the line's totally full here at WWTC, TC Talk Line. And the number, 333-2363. Don't reach the phone. We'll get maybe some open lines a little bit later on with much more coming up in terms of International Shortwave Radio, our Saturday night edition. Welcome back. In case you've just joined us, we're in the middle of TC Talk Line, about 1 hour into the program, Saturday night style. Our good guest tonight, Kim Elliott. Our subject is the fascinating world of international shortwave broadcasting. We've got any number of samples, and I hope that we'll have time enough to get to quite a few of them. Kim, we've got some of the telephone calls waiting, which we give another sample of something coming up that you have taped from the shortwave bands.
Yeah, let's listen to Radio Peking, because it has kind of a nice opening. This is taken from 1975. They've changed their opening fanfare a little bit, but and they announce a satellite, and then there's satellite launching and some interesting music.
Mm-hmm. Radio Peking. Okay, here it is. Push the button.
This is Radio Peking.
Press communique. China successfully launched another man-made Earth satellite on November 26, 1975, under the guidance of China Mao's revolutionary line, on the basis of the victory in the Great Proletarian Cultural Revolution and the movement to criticize Deng Xiaoping and Confucius, and in the excellent situation marked by consistent new victories in the socialist revolution and construction.
What a voice. That was Ode to Peking, and the lyrics for that, if in case you want to sing along, sure, in Mandarin. This is back when Mao was living now, understand. Our great capital, where Chairman Mao lives, the heart of the motherland, the symbol of the unity, the pride of the people, the shining star in our hearts, Peking leads us forward to a future bright.
Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, Peking, like Radio Moscow, like Radio Albania, is a little on the dull side.
Well, yeah, but that music is great. I could sit and listen to him for hours.
You could.
And the Revolutionary Opera, Peking has its redeeming value.
I see.